afternoon, Bay Area. Welcome to the Sights and Sounds Show with Janae Darden, where every week we tap into the Bay Area art scene and bring you rich conversations with artists. On today's show, author Aaron Hundley talks about his novel, writing, and Black men. Then singer and songwriter B. DeVoe tells us the inspiration behind their debut album, Chrysalis. Today's show is about healing from the past and going forward into the future. That's all coming up. Stay with us. You're listening to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden. For many people, including myself, writing is a healing practice. We see that in the book Jack and Evan in verse. The story is about two childhood friends. Evan has a lot going for him, a steady job, a supportive girlfriend, an apartment in San Francisco, but he's struggling with grieving the death of his mother and some other issues. His therapist suggests that he reach out to Jack, and they haven't communicated with each other in years. Over exchanges of emails, the two recall childhood memories and share unresolved feelings. And joining me here in studio to talk more about his book is Aaron Hundley. Hey, Aaron.
Hey, Janae.
Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm so happy you're here. And this book really is deep and just hits at some really important themes. Well, first of all, like, who or what inspired you to write?
Yeah, it's, well, I would say what inspired me initially was, like you meant, well, similar to the main character, Evan, I lost my mom tragically. Mm-hmm. And so I went on, and this is back in 2013. So I ended up writing a, I guess we can call it a memoir.
Okay.
That will never see the light of day.
Okay.
But it was just diving in to some of my wounds, or some of my childhood wounds that I hadn't addressed before. And then one day I woke up, literally like just woke up and had the idea of Jack and Evan.
Wow.
And I used a lot of stories I already had written. Blended it with my imagination, and then that's what came.
Yeah. So you transfer your personal experiences, your memoir, into these characters.
Exactly.
To tell your story. Exactly. So I read in your bio that when you were younger, you wrote poems and stories and songs in secret. Why did you write them in secret?
I joke and say my brothers. I have two brothers.
Okay.
Shout out to Eric and Marquise. But they it's, you know, being a male, being a black male, mm-hmm. You are expected to, live a certain way, carry yourself a certain way, especially in the environment I grew up in.
Okay.
And so.
And what environment was that?
Well, just, you know, a lot of, drug infused, just, mm-hmm. You have to, be a little tough to make it, mm-hmm. make it in. And so, I thought keeping that to myself was, for one, it was kind of my own little world and kind of me a way to escape from where I was from, mm-hmm. partly, but also I was terrified of this thing that I knew that I loved so much. I was terrified of someone saying that there's something wrong with me doing it, and then somehow being taken away from me. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that does
protect,
make sense.
Protecting myself, but also protecting the thing that I love.
Okay. Because you also say in your bio that most of your early work was destroyed. So it was like, did somebody, like your brothers or somebody, did they take it? Or?
No, that was me.
Okay, you destroyed it.
If I had something, an idea coming up, when I was little, I'd just write it out and just throw it in the trash. And,
okay,
yeah,
okay. Because I was like, who messed with his work?
No.
Okay. So Jack and Evan, and you kind of, you touched upon this. So you grew up, we talked earlier, like in the North Bay area,
mm-hmm,
you
mm-hmm.
know, cities around there, Vallejo,
yeah.
Napa,
yeah.
you know. And so these characters, Jack and Evan, they both end up at, and they're both black boys.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're men, but they're reminiscing about the past. So
right.
they're boys when they're reminiscing, you know, with the past. But they end up at predominantly white schools
mm-hmm.
in the North Bay in mm-hmm. a fictional city.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the only black kids in their class often.
Mm-hmm.
They still get into trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was thinking about when I was reading your book how black parents would send their kids to white schools
mm-hmm.
so that they have better education.
Mm-hmm.
But that still comes with its own challenges for the kids and issues of safety, behavior, isolation.
Yeah.
Talk about that.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that's really important you brought that up because I find that And I was trying to display, and I mentioned it in part of the book that there's dangers being a black male, but dangers in both sides. There's dangers in if you live in a, you know, where there's majority black people, and not all places,
right,
but
not
you
all
know,
places.
Some, but also if you are living or you're going to school in certain places and that's predominantly white, you know, because you may be viewed a certain way, and we've seen it in the news. We see it over and over a time where someone could just be walking down the street and you are. Identified or misidentified as something that you are not.
Right.
And so, yeah, with the characters, there was a challenge in trying to, particularly like Jack, you know, kind of pushed back against that. He's like, I am who I am. And that, you know, that didn't really work too well. Evan went the other way. He was looking out for his siblings. He was trying to be a positive role model. And in that, he had to give away some of his true nature in order to navigate these worlds in this majority white environment, you can call it. Yeah.
Yeah, and I noticed because the book says in verse, right, in the title. And so they're communicating via email.
Yeah.
And I noticed when we look at how Evan's voice is written, it's written like in a poem, just straight down the middle of the page, so I'm thinking straight and narrow. And then Jack's verses are like zigzag all over the page, so I'm thinking jagged edge, you know.
You got it.
Right. Like so the way that they even type matches, you know, their personalities.
Yeah, that's very intentional in the way I wrote that. Absolutely. I wouldn't even say Jack. Yeah, I don't want to give away the end. Yeah, it's just, yeah.
Yeah, don't give away the end. Don't, yeah.
Yeah.
Don't give away the end. But so Evan took a different path in life than Jack, as you said. Mm-hmm. And that's also something that came to mind because that's a common theme or a common thing that black folks that grew up in the hood deal with. You have friends that went one way, and you have some friends that were able to get out of the hood.
That's right.
They may have went to college, you know, started a business or whatever, and so they had more resources and more wealth. And it's complex, right?
That's right.
Yeah. It's complex. Yeah, expand on that, especially because I'm looking at Jack and Evan, and it's like that struggle of wanting to be loyal to your friends, but also to the things have changed.
Yeah. The survivor's guilt is real. You try so hard, and Evan in particular is trying. His intentions are pure. He's trying to make his mom proud. Trying to make his siblings and his cousins and everyone that's looking up to him proud. But as I mentioned before, along the way, you're still. There's still a struggle with keeping a close bond with those people that that raised you and that laid that foundation for you. And in some cases, it's healthy to break apart from that past. But in some cases, you're always going to be attached to that in a positive way. So you got to find that middle ground, and that's what he was trying to do.
And even to not wanting to look like a sellout.
That's right.
As well.
If for someone like, you know, the main character, Evan, that is a word, or without even mentioning in the book, but it just kind of implied that he was trying his best not to be, but you know, again, it's a tightrope to walk.
Yeah, it is a tightrope.
Yeah.
And especially, too, because, as you said, when you're in certain neighborhoods as a black, I mean, I live in Alameda. So, you know, you're in certain neighborhoods where you're seen as a threat, maybe.
Yeah.
Or, like you said, misidentified as someone that's trouble.
That's right.
So you leave and flee for something better, for a better life, but you're still carrying the stigma that's put on, you know, and misinformation and racism, all that stuff that black people deal with.
Yeah. And it's, it's a question of when does a person find peace, you know, you never turn it off.
Right.
And so, and sometimes even when you're trying, your intentions are pure and you're living in these spaces or you're going to school in these spaces like Evan was, it's difficult not to want to become of what people are assuming you are, you right. know, out of anger or out of pushback or something. But that, you know, and that particular, that goes to Jack a little bit. It's like, well, you know, mm-hmm. I am who I am, but I'm, you know, if you're going to assume that I'm that way, well, I'll show you what this
right,
is like.
Right.
You know, so there's that, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like where, no matter where you are, you always got to watch your back.
That's right.
Yeah, you always got to watch your back.
Yeah.
Another big theme in this book that really struck me is that we rarely see in media Black men being vulnerable and expressing emotion and having a, you created a safe space in your novel for these two men to really express their emotions and doubts and anger and frustrations.
Right.
And you did that while still allowing them to maintain their masculinity.
Mm.
And you show that the two can coexist. You can still be masculine and vulnerable.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Talk about the strategy or just your intentions with that of how showing Black men vulnerable, especially to using writing.
Right.
While still maintaining their masculinity. Because I know for a lot of men, not just brothers, but for men, you know, it's like, I you know, I'm a man. You know, I can't be.
Yeah.
I can't be crying,
that's
right?
That's right, so, yeah.
And that's hard.
Yeah. And I grew up that way. And that's what I saw with some of the men around me, but the intention with that was, or for one, I made the therapist. I didn't give the therapist a face or anything. I wanted to be just.
Yeah, I noticed that because I was like, "Who is the therapist?"
Yeah.
And I was coming up. I saw my therapist.
you know? Well, that's what I wanted. I wanted someone to visualize someone sitting on the other side of them that who it can be anyone, and it's just a safe place. And so with be able to be masculine, I think in order to dip into femininity, you know, in that side of for even a male, is actually strengthen your masculinity, right? It balances you out. It makes you I guess you can say whole. So to be able to be gentle is a strength, and I tried to show that with being able to write something as, you know, and lay down, you know, your words and let whatever comes out. Yeah. And so that's why when they're going back and forth, I chose to have their conversations be just, you know, with a gut punch and honesty. And I think that's masculine. You know, it takes courage to, you know, to address things that you don't, you know. That is one of the hardest things you can ever do.
It's very hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I had to learn how to find power in my own sensitivity. And even for me as a Black woman, you always got to be the strong Black woman.
That's right.
Yeah.
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 Absolutely.
So we deal with that. It may look different, right, for each other, but we both deal with that.
Absolutely.
If you're just tuning in, I'm chatting with author Aaron Hundley. His book, Jack and Evan in Verse, is out now. Also, he'll be at Books, Inc. in Alameda next Wednesday evening for a live discussion about his book. Speaking of masculinity, sports. You know, I'm thinking of Black men, Black boys, sports in white schools, you know, and so that can protect them.
That's right.
Also, too, make them vulnerable.
Yeah.
Sports have saved a lot of people's lives. You are a PE teacher.
Yeah.
So I was telling you, I was like, PE teachers are important.
Yeah.
They're very, very important.
Yeah.
What role does sports do you see play with these two characters?
Yeah.
And their relationship, too.
Yeah. I think in their relationship, sports was when they were younger, it was something fun and something to be free with. And Evan took it very seriously. It was a way out for him. That's what he saw. He didn't have any positive male role models in his life. So it's my own book, but I think it said I had a dad, but football was my father. It was the opposite. And it was, you know, that was intentional too, because a lot of the, it wasn't necessarily the men that, or the coaches that were, one particular coach that was leading Evan and guiding him, but it was the discipline that he got to learn, the knowing how to show up for his teammates, show up for people when you really don't want to. There is something that is that can be missing when you don't have a positive male role model in your life. So, yeah, sports was used there, but also it became a point, I kind of liken it to if, you know, if football was his father, you know, it's, I liken it to at some point, it's like going into the family business. At some point, without giving away, Evan lost the passion and the joy that him and Jack shared before.
Okay.
And it's like, he didn't want to go in the family business. Yeah, his father, he loves his father. If football was his father, I'm using that idea. But he needed to explore something else. Something was missing, and it wasn't, he didn't find that in football. He didn't find that in sports. Mm-hmm. Eventually, it got him what he needed. It got him where he needed to go.
Yeah.
But eventually, he needed to explore something else. Yeah.
Yeah, and then especially, too, as he's dealing with grief.
That's exactly right.
Couldn't, totally heal him. So,
that's
so
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you read an excerpt?
Yeah, I'd love to.
Read a piece so people can get even more of an idea of what we're talking about.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so, you want to set it up for us?
Yeah,
or?
Yeah. So this this section I'm going to read, it is, so his therapist, Evan's therapist, suggests that he reached out to Jack. He hasn't spoke to him in years, and so they were going having a few text messages back and forth. And so Jack wasn't really responding. So Evan figured, well, if I'm going to, you know, try to get his attention and try to get him to respond to me, I have to basically cut straight to the chase.
Okay.
And so this is the first email to him. Black yoga pants, warm lattes, preferred Sunday morning aesthetic in the district. I had Tony visiting me, and if my faded sweatpants and his musty tea didn't make us outsiders, certainly our dark skin did. What was I doing there? I asked myself this question often. But that day, the more literal answer was simpler. We were on a walk to find food. Above us, not the typical overcast skies of the city, but a haze that hinted at distant fires. We settled on an out-of-place donut shop where I got my usual maple bar no filling, possibly because the older Korean lady always added free donut holes in my bag. More likely, because the out-of-place found one another. My younger brother called. I asked if I heard from Mama. I hadn't. He mentioned he couldn't reach her, which was rare. So we agreed to hang up. I said I'd try my luck calling her. He'd call our older brother, who lived a 5-minute freeway drive from her side of town. Each of my four attempts went straight to my mama's voicemail. The haze around me no longer seemed due to distant fires. Tony's voice grew muffled. With less oxygen than before, our steps slowed. Eventually, my phone rang. My younger brother again. Hello? Get over to Mama's house now. What's going on? I asked. Her car is out front, the doors are locked, and nobody's answering. Tony drove in silence. I spoke nonstop out of discomfort. We passed the toll booths, the Golden Bridge, descending into Marin County. My phone rang. This time, my sister. Hello? Hello, Evan? Yeah, I'm here, my sister sobbing. What's going on? I asked. She's dead.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was you mentioned the Korean lady with the donuts holes, and I'm thinking, like, I know that lady when I go to her shop, you know, and your kid been going to her shop for years,
right.
And you grow up, and she still hooks you up with some extra
donut
holes. So I'm feeling we're right here in the community, and it was home, and then it takes a tragic turn.
That's right.
And the book is not all about tragedy, but how was it for you? Because there is a lot of trauma in the book.
Yeah.
And that was a cliffhanger. That's the beginning of the book. Mm-hmm. How was that for you to pour what trauma you experienced into these characters?
Yeah. Well, I initially wrote this, finished the original copy or the original version of this book in 2015. And so I've had a lot of space around this. So done a lot of work around it. But it's a traumatic event, and it still brings up certain emotions.
Yeah.
But it's also, at this point, it's an opportunity for providing a light for someone that may need it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it's a mixed bag. It's all of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you told me you self-published the book.
Yeah.
It was released on the day of your mother's birthday.
That's right. Yeah. It was released on her birthday, and when I initially wrote it, I ended up pitching it, and it, you know, it got some attention, but not really. And then I shelved it, wrote a bunch more, and then I had the idea of writing a screenplay, and then poetry got involved, and then it just became this thing. So it was almost too unique in its form. So I was like, you know, I'm going to put it on myself.
Yeah, because you use different formats.
Exactly.
When readers, when they see the interaction between Evan and a therapist, it almost looks like a script.
Exactly.
So you kind of wonder, like, what is Evan thinking?
Yeah.
How is he looking at his therapy sessions?
Yeah.
And then the email communications and text communications between Jack and Evan are more like prose.
Yeah.
So it's the tones are different as you're reading. I almost felt like, and I know we have to wrap up in a few minutes. It goes by quickly. I almost was thinking that this could be YA too, because it's a lot of stuff, you know. I mean, most of it is about you guys being kids,
right,
not
exactly.
you, but like these characters being kids.
No, I agree. I thought about that. I think, I went back and forth with that, but I don't know. Maybe I thought adult maybe gave me a little more freedom.
Yeah.
You know, to do some things, but it's a coming of age novel.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I
can see teenagers. Yeah. Like older teenagers reading
Absolutely.
It.
Yeah.
But it brought back memories. Like I said, we had to like going to the donut shop and then just running around the neighborhood with your friends.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said, it's not all trauma. There is some fun times and some things. I mean, it's not a dramedy, but there is a lot of, you know, it's like life, you know.
It is. Yeah, and they get in trouble and do stuff that, you know, kids do.
That's right. Yeah.
Two things. Okay, so who do you identify more with, Jack or Evan?
Oh, that's a great question. I would say at its core, probably at this point in my life, probably more Jack. But I would truthfully, I would probably say a little more Jack right now.
Really? Okay.
Right now, though.
Okay.
But only, and not in his behavior, but in there's something pure in him. There's something I try my best to put that forward. So
What would you say to a man or a young man who is struggling with just their emotions and maybe they've had something traumatic and they can't deal with it and their issues with masculinity is preventing them from healing?
Yeah. There's a lot. I mean, I'm a big proponent for obviously for therapy and I know some people get concerned over the price and there's a lot of options. I had a friend who at SF State over here, he ended up having free sessions because there's therapists that are still trying to get the clinical hours and everything else. So there's options. I think sitting with someone who is just creates a space for you is extremely healing. And you don't have to be judged. You don't have to wonder if you are looking soft or if you are whatever it is that's going on through your mind. So that's what I did personally. And so that's how I, you know, my inspiration for this book. I would also say, I say solitude. And I mean that, it doesn't necessarily have to mean you have to, you know, be gone, be by yourself, because you may have different obligations, you know. But a 5-minute piece of quiet will do something for you, you know, just to hear your own thoughts and recognize that you are not your thoughts. You know, we have thoughts, but you are not your thoughts. You are not your emotions, but we have them. You need to feel them. And to know that, to sit in that, to know that you are the consciousness that are aware of these things are crucial. Now, that seems a little, may seem a little advanced, but by sitting down, when I first started doing it, I realized how little I ever did that. It was always running from the past. It was always trying to get to something else. And so to avoid that pain. And so that's really what we're doing when we're moving around. And we live in a society that's really pushing stuff in your face to distract you. Let's be real.
It's a lot of noise.
That's right. Yeah. And so,
Well, Aaron, I enjoy talking with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Great talking with you.
Aaron Huntley's book is Jack and Evan in Verse, and it's out now. You can catch him at Books Inc. in Alameda next Wednesday at 5:30 p.m. for a live discussion of his book. And coming up, R&B for the Soul. Oakland singer and songwriter B. DeVoe chats with me about their gorgeous new album. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Sights and Sounds show with me, Janae Darden. B. DeVoe describes himself as a creative force, and you can see why after listening to their debut album, Chrysalis. This neo-soul R&B album touches your heart. B. has performed with major artists such as David Diggs, Patrice Rushen, and Kehlani. And they performed here at KLW for my Valentine's Day event, Sights and Sounds After Dark. And I'm so excited they're here because I've been waiting for this album since the first time I heard B. sing. And B. DeVoe also joins me in studio. B.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow. I'm so... Okay, so B, it was... You had opened for another Oakland singer, Satya.
Oh, yeah. Who's also high school together.
Yes,
yeah.
Your fellow Oakland School for the Arts, OSA, classmate, alum. Mm-hmm. And you opened for them. This was... I can't remember if it was before the pandemic or like maybe right after things opened up. And I saw you singing and you sang an original song that you wrote. And I was like, they wrote that? Because I don't know, you might have been, you were barely 20.
Oh, wow.
And I said, man. And then like your voice. And I said, man, they have so much soul. I mean, it just really hit my heart. And when I was telling my KLW colleagues that I was interviewing you, and they remember when you performed at our Sights and Sounds After Dark event.
Yeah.
And one of my colleagues was like, oh, you know, B left me in tears, you know. So B, I mean, but it's good tears, right? It's like they're tears.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So when did you start singing and songwriting?
Man, okay, well, my grandmother tells me that I came out of the womb singing.
I believe
that's her story. My version, or like my first memory of singing, is probably around like the age of 2.5, maybe 3 years old. My dad, he was a teacher at this all-black school called Roots of Unique Awareness. Okay. We had a school choir, and my sister, Ajali, who's 4 years older than me, she started singing in the choir, and as any younger sister does, I followed right after her and started singing too. And so that's how I soon, you know, found out that I had a little voice. Mm-hmm. But songwriting came a little, like a few years later when I was sitting in the back of my mom's car trying to record a voice memo, and I just had this song come through,
just
like just from beginning to end. And then my mom was like, where did that come from? And I was like, I don't know. And then from there, I just started making stuff up. And yeah, I don't know. Nobody really told me that I was necessarily good at it as a 6 year old, but like, you know, I just kept doing it because it just...
So at 6, you were recording your original music on voice memo.
Exactly. And by 7, my dad let me use GarageBand and stuff. So I was producing little beats and writing to that and just trying to create like as soon as I could, I feel like.
So it was in you from the beginning.
Yeah.
Okay, so now, so we go from 6 years old and GarageBand and now you're 25 with your first full-length album.
Oh my gosh, wow.
How does it feel?
Honestly, it is a bit insane. I have like tried to record music probably like as soon as I finished high school. So I was 17 when I graduated. And like, you know, to be 25 now, so that's at least 7 years have passed. It's just, it feels like such a blessing. It feels very surreal. Mm-hmm. It feels very like, is this even real life right now?
Yeah.
Because I just feel like I've been thinking and dreaming and like manifesting and wanting this for so long. Yeah. So to actually like to actually have a body of work, a project, like even when you introduced the intro earlier and you said B. DeVoe's debut album, Chrysalis, I've just never heard those words come out of somebody else's mouth. So I like screamed in the other room. I was just like, oh, my gosh, like, wow, like this is like it's really happening. And so it's just it feels amazing. I feel so blessed. I feel grateful to people like my grandmother who used to say, like, You know, you just got to get ready for what God has in store, yeah. and you just better buckle up and hang on tight, because once it starts, you know, it's just nonstop. And I just feel like that's kind of how it's been. So I'm really blessed. And shout out to Women's Audio Mission for making it all possible.
Yeah, they do such great work. And definitely your music is a blessing.
Thank you. I'm thinking
even just the last time I saw you, which was probably about 2 years ago, mm-hmm. and I could see how you've evolved. You know, I can hear it in the music. And even 2 years ago, the music, like I said, just knocked us dead. But like, I can really just hear and see how you evolved. So Chrysalis, mm-hmm. I heard the album. And of course, I thought of butterflies.
Yeah.
I looked up chrysalis. I knew what it was, but I said, let me just look it up. So according to Webster's Dictionary, a chrysalis is a moth or a butterfly at the stage of development when it's covered by a hard case before it becomes an adult insect with wings. Mm. It's when the insect is between larva and adult.
Yes.
Yeah. So talk about what chrysalis means to you, this title.
Yeah, so it actually took a while to settle on this name, but I first created a mood board because this album kind of ranges emotionally, like mm-hmm. across the board, mm-hmm. across the spectrum. You know, there's joy, there's happiness, there's love, mm-hmm. there's like, you know, like that fresh, brand new love, and there's also like that tough love that's like, I need to get the hell out of here, you know, mm-hmm. I can't do it anymore. And so like just wanting to find a way to encapsulate all of that.
Yeah.
And I feel like one of the songs that I think about when I think about chrysalis and how I came up with that is Sometimes You Need to Burn in Hell. It's called Since Be. That's another way to say it. And I know that title might be off-putting, but what it's really about is kind of what that definition just spelled out, is just like needing to like go inward, mm-hmm. to process, to grieve, to grow, to evolve, and then being able to emerge, you know,
yeah.
with your wings, with all that you are, with your light unapologetically. And I feel like you know, since losing my eldest sister, mm-hmm. which definitely has informed a lot of these songs, like just the loss and the grief that mm-hmm. I've experienced, it has also just helped me, like, I lost my train of thought.
Well, you were saying, like, you know, losing your sister and how that's helped
yes.
you and dealing with the grief. And
yes.
And how
I feel like I've had to kind of shed everything that I've thought I knew mm-hmm. about this life. You know what I'm saying? And kind of like rebirth myself through this project, through these songs. And so I was trying to think of words that kind of fell into the umbrella of like transformation and growth, and you know, also maybe like the hardship. And I
yeah.
feel like even with the definition you said, it was like, it's a hard outer layer,
right.
you know, it's not soft,
no.
you know. And so I feel like loss and grief and also change in general,
mm-hmm.
you know, people are not always happy to go through those things. And
no.
I'm a fire sign, so I'm definitely like maybe not always the funnest to deal with. And so I feel like I do have that hard outer shell, but anybody who knows my heart knows that like I'm really just a teddy bear.
Well, definitely, because I mean, like I said, the because I feel like that was the intent,
mm-hmm.
you know, to show that softness and that we can be soft. And I'm even thinking about what Aaron Hudley, the author I interviewed before you, where he talked about it's hard to go inside,
yeah.
you know, and deal with our things, you know, mm-hmm. and so it takes a lot of strength to do that. But we got to play some music so folks can get an idea why I'm so excited that you are here. So let's hear Safe Place. Let's start with that.
Oh, yeah. You've been walking on this road so long. You place, a safe place, leads you to a safe place, safe place, I'll lead you to
a safe place,
I'll lead you to
safe
a
place,
I will lead you,
place,
I'll lead you,
safe place.
So the song Be Safe Place, when I heard it, it speaks to me, it spoke to like our hope and dreams for ourselves. Mm. A lot of us are tired. Mm. It's a whole lot going on. And just with all that, life will still be life. And mm-hmm. it speaks to so like our tired souls, our exhaustion. Mm. So what inspired that song? That's what I took from it.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you for sharing. My mom actually told me to write a letter to my 24-year-old self. Mm-hmm. So the song is like just about a year old now. Oh, my gosh. Wow. My birthday is on August 1st, for those that don't know. Leo gang. But yeah, my mom told me to write a letter to myself and just like tell my, you know, just think about the things that maybe my younger self might need to hear. And me being the Leo that I am, I said, okay, I'll do that, but I'm gonna also do what I want to do, which mm-hmm. is write a song. And so I was house sitting for one of my old teachers from OSA, and she has this beautiful mahogany acoustic guitar.
Oh,
and
nice.
She allowed me to play it, and you know, just the energy of being able to play that. The sun was shining, it was early in the morning, and I just sat down, and I actually stole that chord progression from Blackbird, because you know, artists, that's what we do, we steal in the best way, you know, it's complimentary.
Okay.
And so yeah, I stole those chords from Blackbird. I found that little riff that
mm-hmm. we'll say inspired.
Yeah, inspired.
I don't want Beyonce, Paul McCartney coming after
you. Oh no, he can't. But yeah, you know, I rearranged it and made it my own. And I found these words that were just like speaking to this younger version of me, like the inner little me that needed to hear, you know, basically like you can be everything that you need for mm-hmm. yourself. And I feel like we often as human beings just in this experience, mm-hmm. in this society, we're often trying to reach outward, you know, and find something that's outside of ourselves. And mm-hmm. I really feel like everything that we need is inside ourselves. And so that's kind of what this song is, like a reminder that I can be a safe place and a home mm-hmm. and a comfort, even when it, you know, sometimes feels like I'm alone or it feels like I don't have anyone. It's like I always have myself, and of course I always have God or spirit, however you know, actualize the universe for yourself. But for me, I remind myself like I have my ancestors and I have me, and I have that safe space. I can create that safe space.
Again, you're 25, and with your first full album, another theme is love.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely love. That whole album is love. Just the love you put into it is about love. What have you learned about love so far, with 25 years on this planet?
I feel like I've learned a lot about love. I'm a Leo. I know I've said that already, but we are ruled by the sun.
And you just had a birthday.
Right, and then Venus, you know. My Venus and my Mars are also in Leo. And so I just feel like I operate from a place of love. Like I'm very heart forward, not mind forward.
Mm-hmm.
Not most of the time. And so I don't know. Like when I think about what I've learned about love, I've learned that love can be so many things. It can show up in so many ways. Love can be, you know, something huge. It could be something really small.
Mm-hmm.
It could be an action. It could be a person. I feel like since losing my sister, I've learned to find love in like everywhere, you know, like I've been able to kind of reshape my perspective and just kind of remind myself how much of a gift it is to be able to breathe air on this earth, you know, period. And to still be here, like, you know, thriving. And not only that, but be doing something that I love, like music, and to have these gifts. And so I feel like, I don't know, I'm learning more about love through my community. I'm learning more about love through Just like the people that I've met over like just the past few months, like this, you know, little run that we did in DC and then coming back doing Outside Lands and then coming here with you. It's just, I feel like there's love all in through my life, right, all in through my spaces. I feel like I'm surrounded by love.
And you're doing so much, and I'm thinking like your sister would be proud of you.
Yes.
And the first song on the album, Because You is about your sister, mm-hmm, and who passed away from violence at, mm-hmm, 37 in 2023. And so I know that grief is in the album too. Mm-hmm. And this is a beautiful tribute to, is Taurean? Is
that Taurean? Taurean DeVoe.
So before we play the song, just tell us, I want to lift her up. Mm-hmm. I know we talked about lifting, mm-hmm, her up in this interview. Tell us, I guess, what she meant to you or anything you want to say about her.
Yeah, Taurean Wolfe DeVoe. She's the first of five girls on my mom's side. She was an artist, a farmer, entrepreneur, a singer, musician, writer, a mother to my niece Meridian. Mm-hmm. So many things. She was a pioneer, yeah, for all of us, really. Like, she graduated from NYU. She went to boarding school in places like London and just lived life to the fullest. She was, yeah, a Capricorn. yeah, she was light. She was love. She was everything that we needed, I feel like. You know, like, I feel like when it comes to siblings, anybody who has siblings, there's like a, you know, there's not a hierarchy, but there is like a energy that exists between the two, okay, all of y'all, you know? And I feel like she was that, like, you know, that glue, mm-hmm, in a lot of ways.
And
that,
you said, kinda, she was the oldest.
Yeah, yeah, she was the oldest. So yeah, she was the glue and just the blueprint for all of us. Mm-hmm. One of my like most fondest memories is just like freestyling with her and me and my sisters. And that's something that we all just grew up doing together. Like, this music is just, you know, in our souls. And yeah, that's just something I'll never forget. Just like being able to have fun with her, doing things that we both enjoyed and having so much in common. Honestly, because she's so much older than me, about 10, 12 years older than me, I didn't get to like spend as much time with her growing up, mm-hmm, as maybe some of my other siblings. So I feel like now, like through my, you know, building my altar and, you know, learning about her through my niece and my mom, and like I'm learning more about my sister still. Yeah. But yeah, she really just left an impact on me to never really stop. You know what I'm saying? Like the song, there's also another song, Keep Going, Don't Stop, on my album. And
that's inspired by her too. Yeah.
I feel like it is. I feel like there's just an energy in my soul now that I just can't give up. Yeah. You know, and maybe before, like, I thought I could because it was just me. But now it's like, no, I got my sister with me, and I have my sister to make proud. And my sister, you know, is here with me in these rooms, here with me in these spaces. Even when I feel like maybe I'm alone, like, she's always with me. And so I feel like, yeah, I got to go hard. I got to go harder than I've ever gone before.
Well, you definitely put in your heart into this song.
Yeah.
So let's hear, so folks can hear a little bit of Because You.
Thank you.
Acknowledge you, Taurean Janine Wolfe DeVoe, for being my first best friend, a lover, my first bully, an artist, my first savior, and a sister to five. I don't think anyone will ever truly understand me or know me the way that you have. I demand justice. For my sister,
who
is a granddaughter, a daughter, a niece,
we're gonna make you proud.
A mother,
a friend,
and your legacy will forever continue to live through me.
Love you, Taurean.
And through everyone who knew you.
Life has a funny way of playing tricks on you, trying to make you think that you can't make it through. Then it turns around and surrounds you with those who pick you up when you fall. They pick up the pieces when you're scattered. They put you back together when you're tattered, yeah. They hold your hand when you're scared, oh. And you know that they're always there because you show.
Such a beautiful tribute. Yeah. Like I said, I imagine. I know I'm a big sister, so I know when I see, you know, younger siblings like doing their thing.
Mm.
You know, I feel proud.
Yes.
And
shout out to all the older siblings.
Shout out to the big sisters. You know, we hold it down. We
yes.
try.
Yes. Yes, you do.
So I read. Because you've done so much, like your other relatives in your family. So I read, like, and I said this earlier, you perform with David Diggs, Patrice Rush. Okay, you know you can sing when you perform with Patrice Rush. All right. So, Kehlani, Ledisi mentored you.
Well.
How was that different?
She came to OSA.
Okay.
For a master class.
Okay.
I'm not sure which bio this is, but this one is probably older.
Okay,
but,
it was.
Uh-huh. But Ledisi came to my school, OSA, because we just, the opportunities
that
yeah,
people
we had
like
were
that
crazy.
Go to OSA.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's also, I don't know if she's an Oakland native, but I know she's been out in Oakland.
Yeah, she spent a lot of her youth in
exactly.
Oakland.
Exactly. So
yeah.
She's, you know, well-known out here.
Yeah.
And so I had the opportunity to sing for her after she did a master class for our, like, whole department.
Yeah.
And so I don't know why I phrased it like that, mentored, but I wish.
Okay. I was like, Ledisi mentored her. Okay, because I love Ledisi. What did you learn from her? Just having that interaction.
Right.
She'd been through it with the business. So
right.
I'm thinking to learn something.
I remember
from her
telling us some stories about her selling, you know, her CDs out the trunk,
right.
As many artists do, you know, just needing to do that groundwork, footwork, you know, needing to be the A&R, the producer,
yeah.
The manager, all the things that you need to do as an independent artist,
yeah.
And just kind of how she was out there grinding,
yeah.
To make it. And then also learned about her classical training, mm-hmm. in her voice, which allows her to do such amazing things.
Yeah.
Like, she's really one of the best vocal performers of our time, in my opinion. And that, for me, is saying something, because I really don't think that many people out here nowadays, you know, vocally, they really do a lot. But she's so agile. She's so talented. Her tone is so clear. She's precise.
Yes.
She's clean every time. Like, yeah. So just being able to witness her sing for us, and then also just hearing a little bit about her story, definitely has impacted me and my journey as well.
Yeah. I mean, especially now, you know, there's criticism of the music industry, how like there's so much more focus on looks and not the actual
art
and craft and the
yeah.
skill and the sound.
Exactly.
So you can sing. You could write a song.
Yes.
Okay. And you could play guitar.
Yes.
So you play your instrumentals.
Mm-hmm.
And you could paint.
Yes. Yes, I do paint as well.
Beethoven's list of talents are endless. Because I saw the jacket that you made.
Yes.
And I said, B, you could paint.
Yes. You can get a custom painted piece, denim jacket, pants,
that.
Anything. You can hit me up at my Instagram _BDeVoe.
Y'all better do it
yes.
while y'all can get them.
Yes, please. but yeah, I had this idea when we were going to the Kennedy Center that I just wanted to look, you know, the Kennedy Center is the Kennedy Center.
Right.
So it's like, okay, I don't have the money to like go buy like a name brand, you
right.
know, something really, really special for this. But I do want to feel like, you know, I'm stepping into BDeVoe
yeah.
and all that BDeVoe is, and doing that with, you know, as much intentionality as I can. And I was like, I'm going to paint this jacket. I went to Ross. It was $30. And I was like, I'm going to paint this, because it was just a basic blue denim. I was like, I got to spruce it up.
The design on the back is gorgeous.
Thank you.
Baby, we have like a little over 1 minute left.
Oh my goodness.
I know, it was so fast. And I had another song I wanted to play. So when y'all get the album, make sure you listen to Pluto. Because I like
it. Yes, it's out now, actually. So you can go check it out wherever you listen to music.
Because I thought it was August 15th. So people can get the album now.
Oh no, not the album, but you can listen to Pluto.
Okay, Pluto. Okay.
Pluto is out.
Listen to Pluto because it's Afrofuturistic and I just like how you envisioned a brighter future, and I think
we
need that right now. 30 seconds. Your album feels like a refuge.
Mm.
It reaches your soul. It's a beautiful album again.
Thank you.
Do you hope this work, your work, affects people, this album? 20 seconds.
I hope that it can be healing. I hope that it can be a vehicle for change. I hope to heal my family. I hope to heal my community. And I hope that it opens doors not only for me, but for my community and for anybody that knows me, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I hope that it can be something for everyone.
Yeah, I think it is because I love that I've been listening to it on repeat.
Oh,
that's the perk about being a journalist. I can listen to stuff.
Yes.
Especially when it's good. Okay, so B will be back with us next week to talk about their experience at the Kennedy Center. But congratulations on a beautiful, beautiful album.
Thank you so much.
You started off high on your first album, and I knew you would, so congratulations.
Thank you so much for having me, Janae.
Anytime, anytime. I've been speaking with singer, songwriter, musician B. DeVoe. Their album, Chrysalis, is out this Friday, August 15th, and you can also listen to some of their singles right now. And make sure you buy their album. Buy their album on your favorite music platform. Support local artists. And B will be performing at the Yerba Buena Gardens in San Francisco next Thursday afternoon on August 21st.
Yes.
All right. That's all the time we have for the Sights and Sounds show with me, Janae Darden. Thank you to our show producer, Porfirio Rangel, our board operator, Damian Miner, and our director of audio programming, David Boyer. And thank you for tuning in. On Monday, my first guest ever for this show, poet Allie Jones, is taking her book Saltwater Moonshine to the theater, and you can see her stage reading on Monday evening, August 18th at BAM House in downtown Oakland. Just a friendly reminder and request to help us at KLW continue in bringing you uplifting, quality, informative programs that shine the spotlight on Bay Area artists like B. DeVoe and Aaron Hudley. And you can go to www.klw.org/donate. We'll have another great show for you right here next Wednesday at 4 p.m. Please tell folks about the show. You can follow me on Instagram at Janae. I forgot my Instagram. Anyway, you can follow me at Coco Fly Instagram. Porfirio cracking up. I was like, Janae.Darden. Just look up Janae Darden. You'll find me. I'm 46, y'all. All right. Until then, be good to yourselves and each other. Thank you.